Okay, we're on Gemara Sota, Mem Vav Amud Beis, 46b. We're talking about the virtues of accompanying people along the way, and then the last story we said about the fact that the prophet was not Elisha was not accompanied. And then there were these what they call Ne'orim Kitanim. They were called youths that were minors, and they went and cursed out Elisha because he made the water sweet, and then they're going to lose their business, and therefore he had to curse them out. He sent the bears after them, right? So now we're going to continue with a little more explanation of those Ne'orim. Tana was taught in a Braisa. They give a different interpretation. We said they were Ne'arim, means they were empty of mitzvahs, and Ketanim, they had very small faith. Now we're going to learn a different braisa that says, Ne'arim hoyu, the fact they were youths, so they were young people, but what does it mean they were Ketanim? Ubiz bezuatzma kiketanim, but they called little, why? Because they demeaned themselves by acting like little children. Why? By mocking Elisha. So they were acting like a child, just like a child doesn't realize that his mother acquires the means to support him from elsewhere. These youths, whose mockery of Elisha indicate a lack of faith, believe that their livelihood derived from their efforts, and then believe that ultimately it comes from Hashem. So that's why they had that name. Okay, then the Gemara says, wait a minute, maybe there's a different reason. Maski lo Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef questions the whole point where the Gemara seems, remember, the whole problem was, the Gemara says the two terms don't go together. A nar is older, a katan is smaller. So Gemara says, wait a minute. Vidilma, maybe the whole point was al shem makomam. Maybe they were called Ne'arim because of the name of the place where this such happened. In other words, maybe they're called Ne'arim Katanim because the children who were Katanim came from a place called Ne'oran. Right? And how do we have such a similar idea? Milo Kosov, doesn't it write somewhere else? Ve'aram yatsu gidudim vayishvu me'eretz Yisrael nara ketana. And Aram, that's the name of a place, had gone out into raiding parties and had taken captive from Eretz Yisrael a little nara, nara ketana. They took a little nara. Gemara says, Vekashalan, same question, nara Uketana, nara means a young woman. A katana means a little girl. Same problem. So look how the price over there answers it. For Amar Rav Padas, Rav Padas says, they captured a katana de Minuran from a town called Neuran. So maybe the same thing over there by the ones that Elisha cursed out. Maybe there were young children from a place from Neuran. So the Gemara answers, Hasam lo mefarish makama. There, regarding the girl, it doesn't say where the story took place, so we assume the word Nara means the name of the place. But here we are told the name of the place. Hakam mefarish makaman. Over here, their place was specified, it was said as Jericho. So once Jericho, then we couldn't say they were from a place called Nara. So therefore, we can't give that answer, therefore we had to give the other two answers. Okay, so going back to the story now. So Elisha went and sent the bears after them. So let's finish up the story. It says, Vayifen acharav, vayireim, vayikal aleim, b'shem Hashem. And he, Elisha, turned around, he saw them, and he cursed them in the name of Hashem. The question is, Ma'ra, it says he turned around and saw. What does it mean he saw? It seems superfluous, because when he turned around, obviously he saw them. So what does it mean he turned around and he saw? So Amarav, so Rav answers, what did he see? Ra'a mamish. He saw them in a literal sense. In other words, he saw them for the purpose of punishing him. So, in other words, according to this, in other words, sometimes seeing is the way you punish. We'll see in a minute, going to get proof to that. So it doesn't mean he turned and he saw them for the purpose of seeing them, but rather he looked at them, as they say, he gave them the evil eye. He gave him that look, and that's how they were punished. He didn't say anything as a curse. He gave him the look, and that look was a curseful look. How do we know this? Kidatanya, like we learned in a braisa, it says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kamakam, in another place, Kamakam Shenastu Chachamim Einayim, wherever it says the rabbis gave their eyes. It's a price. Rav Shimon goes, whenever it says the rabbis looked at people, you know what's going to happen. O Misa, either death came out of it, O Oni, or poverty came out of it. In other words, they see much more than other people see. So when they see their eyes about someone for the purpose of wanting to punish them, it's a bad news. So therefore, either death or poverty, and poverty is like death. Okay, that's one answer. Another interpretation of what Elisha did, in terms, it says, if he turned around, he must have seen them. So the first interpretation, they say, he saw, they look, he looked at them, he gave them the curse through looking at them. Shmuel says, no. He saw with prophetic vision what was, where did they come from? And he saw that their mothers got pregnant with them on Yom Kippur, which means their parents were having marital relations on Yom Kippur when that's not good. In other words, the Pasuk says, Vayir Aim, which means, and they saw them, but it can also be looked as a contraction as Vayar Aim. He saw their mothers. So Shmuel says Elisha wouldn't have punished them just because they mocked him, but he was able to see that their mockery came from very bad sources because they came into being when you did a big Avera of having intimacy on Yom Kippur. And therefore he saw, they're coming from bad stock, that's not good. So now people shouldn't be so amazed, you know, when you hear stories of the Choza Lublin, who was able to look at people's faces and see their whole lifetimes from before them and previous generations. You see, in the times of Gemara already, they looked at people and they saw where they came from. Okay, that's the second interpretation. So he saw their past. He saw their origins, where they came from. Third interpretation, Rav Yitzchak Nafcha Amar, a different thing he saw. Bloris Rolahem Kamaraim. He saw that they had such long locks of hair like the Amorites. Okay, you see, long hair has always been negative connotation, not just nowadays with the dreadlocks, right? They said it was a pagan custom to allow the hair of the back of the head to grow for an entire year before cutting it. This is called Bloris, and therefore it's forbidden for a Jew to grow his hair in the style of pagans. So therefore, they learned the pasuk like this: Vayir aim is the beginning of the words of Emori. He saw they were acting with Emorite practices, so therefore they deserve to get killed. Fourth interpretation: Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rosh lahayisuhem lachluchishal mitzvah. He saw they didn't even have any traces of mitzvahs, and therefore there's no reason to have rachmonis on them. So therefore, that's similar to what was earlier stated. They were empty of mitzvahs. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Maybe their descendants who could have come from then would be doing mitzvahs, and therefore don't punish them because maybe they'd have children in the later generations. Maybe that. So what do you think the answer is going to be? Amar Rav Elazar. No, he saw lo bam. There wasn't in them. V'lo b'zaram, and there wouldn't be in their descendants. At Sof Kodos, until the end of all generations, he saw that there was no future in them. This is similar to where else did we have that before? We saw about Moshe Rabbeinu, when it says he looked when the Egyptian was hitting him, and he looked this way and that way. He looked past and future from this Egyptian. Nothing good's going to come out of it, and therefore he killed him as well. Okay, now we continue on with the story back with the bears. Okay, we continue on. Now that we're in the story, let's just continue with that story. Vateitzena shtayim dubim minayar. Two bears came out from the forest. Vatevakana mehem arboim ushneilim. And they tore apart 42 children. These are the ones that were mocking the prophet Elisha. Moving up to the top now of Mem Zayin Amid Aleph. So now we got to see what exactly happened in the story. It's a machlokas rav and Shmuel, exactly what happened. Chad Omar, one of them says, Nes, it was a miracle. It was just one miracle. Chad Omar, and one says, Nes, Bisof Mes, a miracle within a miracle. Okay, so let's see what the opinions are saying. Mand Omar, Nes, one that says it was a miracle. Well, he says, well, the fact of the matter was, Yar Haya, there was a forest already there. There was a forest, they were in a forest. And Dubim Lohavi, there were no bears, and therefore the miracle was Elisha cursed them out, and the bears came out of nowhere. Okay? Now, obviously, if there were usually bears in this forest, there would be no reason to attribute their attack to supernatural causes. But the verse implies that they killed the youths as a result of Elisha's curse. Furthermore, the youths certainly would have taken care not to stand near a forest which contained dangerous bears. Evidently, bears did not frequent this forest, and these two bears appeared miraculous as a result of Elisha's curse. So that, according to Rot, one of them, that was the miracle. The bears came out of nowhere, and they ripped them apart. One miracle. However, there was a forest. The other rabbi says, Man Domer Neis Pesoch Neis was a miracle within a miracle. He says, Lo Yar Hava Lo Dubim Hava. There was no forest even in the story here. There was no bears in the story, and the miracle was they both appeared miraculous. All of a sudden there's a forest here. All of a sudden there's bears over there. Wait, Morris says, that's kind of odd. Why do you have to have this the miracle of the bears, I understand, in order to kill them? We need a miracle for a forest to appear out of nowhere. What's the difference? Have a miracle, have bears come out of the Sobeys Plaza. What's the difference? If you're having the bears come as a miracle, what do you need the forest for? That's what he's going to ask. V'lahavi dubim v'lolahavi yar. So just let there be bears. You don't need to have a forest. Why do you have to make an extra miracle? The answer is divisi, because without a forest in which to hide afterwards, the bears would have been scared to attack the youths. That's a crazy answer. I don't understand that at all. In other words, wild animals are not bold enough to attack humans unless they have a place of safety of which to run afterwards. I don't understand that. If it's really a miracle, you think the bears are going to be afraid? Okay, anyway, alternatively, the Gemara refers to the youths. He says that the bears not been hidden in the forest, the youths would have taken fright and run away when they saw the bears. And Dalai Lusha could have created bears that were bold enough to attack him without a place. Oh, it's my kasha, right? However, even miracles conform to the laws of nature as closely as possible. Thus, rather than creating bears who would act contrary to the laws of nature, Elisha performed an additional miracle and created a forest so bears would be bold enough to attack the youths. I don't know, because you're trying to minimize the miracle, eh? So what do? You make another miracle to minimize the first miracle. What you're saying, by making a bear, that's one thing, and now it's crazy because the nature of a bear is not to attack unless they have this forest to hide in. So what do? So you make a miracle to make a forest. Okay. Anyway, there's obviously higher and deeper things here than meet the naked eye. All right, now let's. Now that we're on the topic of the 42 children getting ripped apart by the bears, let's go to an earlier source that will hint to the fact that this was going to happen. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina says, Bishvil arba'im ushnayim korbano shehikriv Balak ben Moav. When Balak wanted to hire Bilam to curse the Jewish people, he brought 42 offerings. So in the merit of Balak bringing 42 offerings, that's what happened. When he needed to make the curses, Bilam told Balak on three occasions to set up 7 altars and have a bull and a ram on each altar. 3 times he tried to curse the Jews. He asked Balak to make 3 times altars, each time 7 altars, each time a bull and a ram. So 7 times 2 is 14, 14 times 3 is 42. So Balak made 42 altars, and in the merit of that, as it were, Hufku Yisrael, our boy Mishnah, 42 children were torn out of Israel. Okay. Well, I guess it gave what?
What does one have to do with it?
Because I guess since like we said yesterday, if a guy he walked 4 steps, he deserved to enslave the Jews for 400 years. In other words, he got some benefit out of us. So Balak, by bringing all these korbanos, he got some benefit. And what was that benefit? You know, and he wanted Jews to die, so he got Jews who were sinners to die. In other words, there was a negative spiritual. You have to know that Balak and Bilam were big sorcerers. It wasn't Stam Narishkeit what they were doing. Had Hashem not intervened, the Jewish people would have got wiped out. They would have got wiped out. So they did things that carried certain negative spiritual realities. And there was something as a IOU from their negative spiritual activities. That number 42 meant that there should be 42 people killed. However, Hashem protected them. But when these youths acted like terrible children, so just like the Jews, You know, they had to serve 400 years. So the 42 had to come somewhere, and therefore it came at that point. However, the Gemara has a question on this. Ain't he? So he meant that Balak was rewarded for these offerings. The question is, Ain't he? Is this so? That he was rewarded? The Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav says, Le'olam yasok adam etar mitzvos ve'afal bishalo lishma. He said a golden rule. A person should always engage in Torah mitzvahs, even if it's not for its own sake. Even if he has ulterior motives. Why? What's the golden rule? Shemitoch shelo lishma, bo lishma. If a person first starts not with pure motives, will eventually come to pure motives. That's a golden rule. So therefore, in other words, my person might say, you know what, this mitzvah, if you want me to do the mitzvah now, Rabbi, I'm not going to do it with the best intentions. So what do we say? Do it anyway. Because why? Let me wait till I have the right intentions. Well, you're never going to have the right intentions with that attitude. So just start it already, right? So that's what he says. The road to Torah study and mitzvah performance with pure motives must of necessity begin with performance of these deeds for ulterior motives, for fame or honor. Only by climbing the spiritual ladder can you reach it. That's a golden rule. Always do mitzvahs, even if you're not doing it for the sake of Hashem, you're doing it for your own reasons. It's okay. Better to do it. Eventually, you'll come to the right reason. So therefore, let's finish up over here. So let's see, as now, this is the statement that Rehuda Marav says. And now he's going to bring a proof to this rule, and then we'll see that's going to bring a question on what we said. And he gives an example. Shibeschar, our boy, Mushnaim Karbanos, in the merit of the 42 animal offerings, Shehikriv, Balak, Melech Moav, because of that, Zocha v'yotzev imenu Rus. Rus came from him. Oh, perfect timing for Shavuos. Shiyotzev imenu Shlomo. That Shlomo Melech came from him. So you see that something else came out of what he did. Now certainly, Balak did not do this for the right intentions. Bringing Korbanos was not for right intentions. He had nefarious desires from this. But yet, coming out from Balak comes Rus. From her came Shlomo. Shekasov Bey, as the Pasuk says about this, Elef Olos Ya'ale Shlomo. Shlomo brought 1,000 burnt offerings. So what's going on over here? Balak's sacrifices were certainly offered for ulterior motives, for he hoped that through them Bilam would be able to curse the Jews. He was bringing korbanos to God, but he brought to God to kill the Jews. It's not a good thing, right? But he was rewarded with descendants who offered sacrifices with pure motives. Okay? So you see, not like it said before, when he gave the 42 korbanos, he merited that 42 kids would get killed. We're saying, no, the korbanos merited that he have a descendant that would bring korbanos for Hashem. And more history about Rus. V'omer Rav Yossi ben Choni, Rav Yossi ben Choni says, Rus, it's a big machlokas here, Bito shel Eglon bino shel Balak hoisa. Rus was the daughter of Eglon, who was the son of Balak. Who was Eglon? Eglon was Melech Moav, was the king of Moav. What's Eglon's, how do you remember Eglon? Eglon was a very fat king. He was a very fat king, and Moav was giving the Jews lots of trouble in the times of the Shoftim. And what was the story with him? Who was the Shofet who killed him? Remember? It was a Shofet called Ehud. Ehud was a lefty. He was a lefty. So he came in and he wanted to have a private meeting with Eglon. But first they check you. They check you if you have any arms. But I always checked everybody on the right side because everybody's a righty. So he kept the sword on the left side because he was a lefty. So then what happened? He gets to be in with Eglon over there. Eglon was a really fat guy, and he says, I have to talk to you. I have words of God to say to you. And I said, you have words of God? So Eglon stood up, and then, whoosh, he killed him. All right, so that's Eglon. Eglon was, according to this, was the son of Balak, okay, and Rus was the daughter of Eglon. So what do you see over there? Rus, was, according to this, was a granddaughter of Balak. And therefore, from Balak's korbanos that he brought, even though he brought the curse to Jews, he would merit to have a descendant, Shlomo Melech, who was, bringing lots of korbanos. So what do you see? The reward of what Balak did was not the death of the 42 youths that the first rabbi said. We're saying his reward was that he had a grandson, great-great-grandson, who would bring korbanos for Hashem. Now, here's the problem. And if those who have been learning Rus or will be learning Rus, there's a major problem with the timing of the whole story of Rus. There's all kinds of genealogical problems, and he's going to explain over here. They said that Ruth, who lived many generations after Eglon, was not actually his daughter. Number one, according to many people, wasn't the daughter. Because if it was the daughter, here's the problem. We know that Ruth marries Boaz. Mm-hmm. Boaz, the Gemara says, is Ifson. Ifson lived a few hundred years after the death of Eglon. So if he lived a few hundred years after the death of Eglon and Ruth was a daughter of Eglon, there's no way Ruth could marry Boaz. So therefore we have to say that she wasn't a daughter, but she wasn't actually his daughter, she was a descendant. So that's what Yossi Bechoni means, that merely she was a descendant from Eglon. Marshon notes that according to one opinion, Balak actually came from the nation of Midian and was appointed king of Moab as an emergency measure to unite these two nations against the Jews. Yossi Bechoni must certainly dispute this contention, for Ruth was descended from Moab and not from Midian. So the machlokas, number one, where is a lot of arguments. So machlokas, this Balak, where was his original nationality? Gemara hears him say he was a Moabite. Other Mephorshim say, no, he was a Midianite who they coalesced. So that was certainly not being agreed with this one. Anyway, what happens is we have a question that we see that the merit of what Balak did to bring the 40 animals, he had a great, great descendant who would bring lots of animals to Hashem. So it's not like the opinion said he was rewarded that 42 Jews got killed. That's certainly not according to this opinion. So, what's the answer? The Gemara answers, Tavosa miha liklala havi. His desire, however, when he brought the sacrifice, why did he bring the sacrifice book? He wanted to curse the Jews. So, therefore, it was finally realized with the deaths of these youths. Because that was his intention. So, therefore, how do we resolve this? So, Rabbi Hanina did not intend to say that Balak was rewarded with the deaths of these youths. The reward was having a great grandson who brought Karbanos. Rather, he meant that Balak's efforts to destroy the Jews, which were the reason for his sacrifices, bore fruit with their deaths. So it doesn't mean David was rewarded. It means to say, rather, it finally got its goal. That his intention was long ago to kill Jews.
So isn't that the same thing?
No, but a reward is something good came out of what you did. So something good came out of what you did was that Shlomo Melech would bring Karbanos. That's really a reward. We're just saying this, we'll call it result versus reward. So he wanted Jews to die, but you know, in the end of the day, that's not a great reward for somebody like that. When talking about reward, it means something good came out of it. So good came out of it, a great grandson who brought Korbanos to Hashem. But the result that he wanted Jews to get killed. Well, at the time he did it, the result would not happen, but ultimately 42 were killed. Although the
rewarded in the first place.
What?
Why was he rewarded in the first place, Balak?
He did bring offerings to God.
That's the reason.
He did bring offerings to God. That is a good thing. His intentions were bad. His intentions were bad. That's what we said. Let's go back. Gemara is saying you should always do good deeds, even if you have bad intentions, because eventually you'll come to good deeds. Right?
Who says he has to get rewarded?
Well, he did something good. Everybody deserves a reward. He brought animals to God, so he deserved a reward. Okay, so what was the reward? Okay, what was the reward? That he had great-grandson who brought korbanos to God. You know? So something good came out of it. I mean, he didn't have any intention for it. But God cannot deny bringing good into the world if you did something good, even if you have bad. But at the end of the day, it was good for the Jews anyway. At the end of the day, it's not like he got rewarded with 62 virgins. And you know, he got rewarded with a great-great-grandson who did things the exact opposite of what he really wanted to do. A good thing came to the world that King Solomon brings korbanos to Hashem. That's a reward. Yeah. The other hand, when the first rabbi says, but he got what he wanted at the end, Because why? He wanted to kill Jews, and he did kill Jews as the time came.
That doesn't sit good with me.
Okay.
You sit, kill Jews, you get rewarded. I don't
know. No. Again, it's not a reward that he got something that he really wanted. Do you think he wanted to be known as the great-great-grandfather of a Jew who would bring thousands of korbanos to God? But something good came out of it. That's all we're saying.
No, it wasn't his doing. Hashem did that for
him. David HaMelech could have come from anywhere else. Didn't have to come from being a descendant from him. Could have been a descendant from somebody else. So since he did bring korbanos to Hashem, so you know, good is, you know, is inherent good. Forget about everybody's thoughts. At the end of the day, an animal was brought to God.
Start out with that intention.
That's what we're saying. You're right. No question about it. We separate the intention from the doing. The fact is, the doing was good. It was a good doing. The intention was terrible. That's why he got killed. He got killed right afterwards. So he didn't get away with anything. He got killed in the battle. So that's not a problem. But he did do a good thing. So the good thing has to come out in something good. So it came out something good. Shlomo Melech came out of it. Something good came out of it. I don't think that Bullock was happy that happened. That something good came out of it. But he did want to kill Jews, and there was a negative spiritual impact in the world that Hashem protected the Jews for hundreds of years from that effect. Remember, when you do something bad, it doesn't just vanish. It's there in the air somewhere. And therefore, when there be 42 Jews who would behave in a very despicable manner, and it's time for them to get punished, then we're going to pull on the evil actions of earlier generations to destroy them.
These youths were not Torah scholars.
No, they were terrible. We said they were very bad people, since they were bad, right? So that's what, again, let's look. Rabbi Chanina did not intend to say, that Bullock was rewarded with the deaths of these youths. Rather, he meant that Bullock's efforts to destroy the Jews, which was the reason for his sacrifices, bore fruit with their deaths. Eventually came true, because they were bad kids who deserved it. Although the sacrifice did not aid Bilaam's curses, they did increase the effectiveness of Elisha's curse. See? Bullock, he said, listen. Bilaam said, listen, you bring offerings, it'll create a certain energy, and when I curse the Jews, the curse will come true. So Hashem said, I don't want the Jews to get cursed right now. I'm not in the mood. The Jews are nice. I don't want it to work. Finished. It's not going to work. However, Bullock did bring these offerings. There was an abeyance floating around this negative energy. So, and the whole purpose of the whole purpose of the korbanos was to aid somebody in cursing the Jews. So now Bullock's sacrifices will aid when Elisha curses them out. Thus, his intent to decimate the Jewish nation was ultimately fulfilled, except in a small scale. So you see how Chazal are like picking apart every level of what a person does, and it has to be judged in many layers. So the fact that he brought animals was all to God was inherently a good thing. Forget about the intention. The intention was terrible, but the action was good. So something good has to come out of that. That's just the way it is. So what comes out? He'll have a descendant like Shlomo who bring korbanos Hashem. On the other hand, he was evil and he created an evil reality. And we can't deny the fact that this evil reality existed. Now, as long as Jews were good, they deserve to be protected from it. Comes along these bad youths. And now remember that evil was done in a way to assist the curse. So now that Elisha felt these were such terrible people, and he cursed them, so now finally the korbanos made the curse come true. Okay, we're still not finished with Elisha over here. Vayomru anshe ha'ir el Elisha. So now the Gemara is going to look at the beginning of the pasuk, and when they described their difficult situation before he did the miracle, before all the things, the beginning of the story. Vayomru anshe ha'ir el Elisha. The people said, he said to Elisha, Hineinu Moshe v'ir tov kasher Adoni ra'eh. He says, behold, the city is good as my master sees, but then it doesn't bring the rest of the pasuk. But the water is bad and the land causes people to die. Okay? That means you don't have drinking water, disease, and things like that. It probably was, you know, not good water. Okay, so that's what he's, but look, so look, wait, so see the contradiction here? Look, it says, behold, the city is good. It's a good city. You know how good it is? We're dying from dysentery. Well, how could it be good if it's not drinkable and people are dying, getting diseased from the water? How can you say the city is good? So look at the golden rule, guys, coming up. But here's the question. If it's bad water and the land causes people to die, so why did they say it was a good land? So what's the goodness of the land? Now, if you look, a settler, right, a pioneer, and you're going to try to settle down and bring roots somewhere, right? When they went to the west, right? Then it went far. What was the first thing, was the first requirement to settle anywhere?
Water.
Yeah. You're going to settle somewhere there's no water? No. Except they're making casinos in Las Vegas. But otherwise, they don't do that, right? So you have to have water. So that's the most important criteria to be a good city. So how can it be a good city that's not even drinking water? That was the question. So look at this incredible rule. And it will tell you why Canadians love Canada. Amir Rabbi Chanin said the following. Interesting, his name was called Chanin. You'll see in a second. The word Chanin is a very unusual name for a name of a rabbi. But you'll see what he's going to teach us is something to do with his name. Rabbi Chanin said, Chain Mokoim Al Yoishvav. The word Chain means like charm. So guess what? That a person feels charmed to the place where he lives from, even though it has a lot of shortcomings. If you're born in a city, no matter how bad it is, you have a certain chen. Chen means you like something for no apparent reason. Usually, liking something, there's a reason. Let's say you like somebody. You like somebody, does something good for you, right? Okay, you like them. You like a city, because the city, let's say people like Miami in the winter. Because Miami does something from the winter. It's warm. So you like Miami, right? But chen means you like something without a justifiable reason. We're just going to say in a minute, there's three things that people like, even though there's no justifiable reason for it. And one of them is a person just likes where he was raised and lived. Even though you live in a terrible climate and whatever, but if this was your rate, that you have an innate favorability disposed to the place where you're from. And that's the rule. So therefore, although it was a terrible place, but since they lived there, this is home. So this, and that's why it's in it. His name is Rabbi Chanin. Rabbi Chanin, that's the root of the word Chain, which means to find favor. So it's, it may not have been his real name, but it was. And again, you're going to see again, and now we're going to see the rule. And again, you see the word Rav Yochanan. Look at this. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the root of Yochanan is also Chain. Rabbi Yochanan said, here's the rule. Shlosha chinosen. There's three types of chen. Here he calls it attractiveness. Okay, and as you're attracted, there's an attraction, although there's not a logical reason for the attraction. There's three things that people find attractive. Yeah. Chen makom, the attraction of the place, al yoshev and its inhabitants. You know, an Israeli comes to Toronto, they say, why would you live here? Like, you had to come in the winter. Why do you live here? What do you mean? It's great. It's such a great place, Canada. Well, are you crazy? It's like, objectively, it's not so great from that perspective, right? But if you live here, you know, it's winter. We love it. We're Canadians, eh? You're like, we love it. So it's not logical. That's the way it is, number one. Number two, interesting, chen isha al bala. A husband, the wife has a favorability to her husband. Other guys are going to say, I don't know, what does he see in this woman? She's nothing special. He loves her. Right, so this attraction a man has to his wife, everyone will say, I don't see anything in that woman. Doesn't matter. He finds in it. That's not a logical thing. And the third thing, chen mekach al mekho, the favor that a purchased item has on the one who purchased it. Okay? Like my cheap $35 Seiko watch. Right? There's no logic for me to like it, but if you wear it for 10 years, you just like it. That's it. Not Seiko. Casio. I'm sorry. Casio. So now he explains. Even a homely woman appears attractive to her husband, as does an item to its purchaser, regardless of its defects. Without this special divine intervention, it's very important. People would never be satisfied with their place of residence, with their spouse, or with their purchases. The result would be chaos. If you think about that, person looked logically at the place where he lives, his wife, or his purchases, logically there'd be chaos in the world. Because if the guy really didn't have this unusual charm, he'd say, you know what, I'm getting another lady. you know, this illogical attraction keeps people together. This illogical attraction keeps people living in the same city, and certainly they don't just keep, you imagine, if you lose the attraction, everyone's going to return everything they buy. So Hashem created this illogical attraction to keep people with all these things in the world. And therefore, that's what Hashem, and that's why these people, although they lived in a city where the waters were terrible, but that's the attraction that people have for their place. Good place to stop.